Well, I see a couple of wild card lines open. I hope those fill up for Dr. Lee Spence, who is a marine archaeologist and a treasure seeker and an author and a cartographer and everything else. Link up and find out more about his bio at coasttocoastam.com. In the meantime, Paul is in Boston on a wild card line for Lee. Go ahead, Paul.
Ian and Dr. Spence, wow, what a program. Two questions. Number one, my dad was First World War Navy and used to tell me about a ghost ship called the Cyclops. I don't know if Dr. Spence had ever heard about that. And the other was, what about the Andrea Doria? I heard that it was on the edge of the shelf and the government stopped diving on it because it was slipping and was down around 600 feet. And there was supposed to be some special cars built for Chrysler by Pininfarina on that. Okay. I wonder if they ever survived anything.
That's very interesting. Thank you so much, Paul. Dr. Spence?
I have heard of the Cyclops, but I really, really don't know anything about it. As far as the Titanic...
He asked about the Andrea Doria.
Oh, I'm sorry. As far as the Andrea Doria, a friend of mine actually brought up the bell from it, a great big bell with the name Andrea Doria on it. Another man that I met had brought up the statue of Admiral Doria. He actually cut the feet off to get the thing up because it was bolted from underneath, and they didn't want to leave the statue. What they did was wrong, but they did come up with this great statue. A lot of people have dived the wreck and brought up artifacts from it, but it is a very dangerous dive. I'm not sure if it's in 265 feet of water or what the depth is, but it's not something that I've dived on.
You know, that he brings up an interesting point, though, in that the shipwrecks, as you explain, they can be in various degrees of danger based on how they're slipping, how they might roll over. What makes a dangerous wreck?
Well, a wreck that you can go into, like the one we're working in the Great Lakes, those can be very dangerous because you can get lost in them, get trapped in them, something collapsed on you. Also, depth makes a difference. But most of the wrecks that we're working, and that really, I think the most treasure is, they're in shallow water and they're broken apart and you're digging into the bottom. There's no ship per se left. The artifacts are there, but most of the stuff is now buried in the sand and we're digging it up.
So if you had to create a criteria for that, it might be that the more intact the ship is, the more dangerous the dive.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so iron ships, you know, modern ships, they remain intact a lot longer than wooden ships, and so they're the ones that are really dangerous.
Let me go to Perry, who's in Greenville, South Carolina, on a wild card line for Dr. Lee Spence. Perry?
Well, it's not the first time I've been called Perry, but it's actually Terry with a T. That's all right.
Oh, sorry. Terry, it didn't have, it says Perry on my screen. But go ahead.
Good morning, Ian and Dr. Spence. It's interesting that you should mention the Atocha. Just this past week, I was on a sightseeing vacation up in Delaware, of all places, and on my list of places to see was something called the Treasures of the Sea exhibit in Georgetown. And I didn't know what it was, but when I got there, it was just on the grounds of the local community college. And it's a room, a pretty good sized room, dedicated solely to the wreck of the Atocha.
Wow.
And various artifacts that were brought up from the Atocha. And in addition to three very well-preserved cannon and some very heavily encrusted swords and rifles, the one thing that really stood out to me was a metallic blob or metallic mass And I would have had no idea what it was except for the explanatory card in the case. And it said that it had been a wooden box full of silver coins. And apparently over time, the wooden box had disintegrated. And in the meantime, the coins fused together to the point you couldn't even recognize it.
A box of coins at that time, they would ship them in wooden crates, and there would be about 300 pounds of coins in a box. And so there would be, if they were dollar-sized coins, there would be about 3,000 of them in a box.
It looks
and
to
if
be
they're
a
half dollar, you double that number and all. But, yeah, I found those, and they're amazing.
I was going to ask you if you'd found anything like that.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, Terry. And how do they become fused together?
Well, I guess as they sulfide, the sulfide binds them together. Also, you have sand that gets in, and that mixes in with it.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
That explains it. That's the binder, then.
Lump. You can get the coins out, but it's real impressive just having the clumps of them.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Joe is in Monterey, California, on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Lee Spence. Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Dr. Lee. I was in the Navy. I was a sonarman. And one time we went out looking for the Scorpion. It's a submarine that went down.
Sure.
And I was wondering if how many subs went down, and do you ever think of maybe finding weapons from the military ships, especially submarines and ships with nuclear weapons? Not that you would look for them. And also, did you ever run into, let's say, a galleon that might have some kind of a curse on it?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's a lot there, Joe. Let's go ahead. How about, let's start with curses. That's a great idea, because that's part of the fables of the sea, right? Part of the note. There's a lot of superstition around ships. Do you run into that?
Well, the only real curses that I know are the people in the government, they're a curse.
Yeah.
And they pass laws trying to protect the wreck, but they're actually... it's sort of the law of unintended consequences. What ends up happening is that wrecks get destroyed by trawlers, they get destroyed by dredging, natural causes, electrolysis, sand abrasion, you name it. These ships are being destroyed, and the government thinks they're saving them by passing laws trying to stop you from working them, and what it means is stuff will be lost forever.
Yeah.
We need to change the thought on that so the government works with us, sets up rules so the archaeology will be done, the history will be preserved, and the artifacts will be preserved.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about the company Galleon Quest that I mentioned before is that they want to keep a collection of artifacts together, and they've issued some cryptocurrency. And the cryptocurrency is going to be backed by the artifacts that we find. And so that'll allow stuff to be preserved and people to see it in a museum, traveling exhibits or whatever. And so that was one of the things that really got me excited about working with them.
That's very interesting. And I respect that balance, right? I mean, that's really all we're talking about is a balance between those two things.
Yeah.
Did we get everything else that he was asking about? So we did curses, and then...
Well, he was asking about submarines.
Yeah.
And somebody recently came to me, and actually I bought their research on a submarine that was supposed to have a great deal of gold that was being smuggled out of Germany at the very end of the war.
Right, this is famous.
And I haven't had time to go through all the research, so I don't know... if it's another ghost galleon or if it's real. But if it's real, it can be found.
Yeah, there's two of those stories. It's not just there may even be more than two now that I think about it, but there's definitely the German gold going from Germany to South America. Then there was also Japanese gold that was in a lost in a submarine or on a ship as well, at least according to that that story.
Well, that Japanese one has actually been found. They haven't salvaged it yet, but it has been found, and it does have gold on it. What's weird is it's in the Atlantic Ocean. You would expect that to be in the Pacific, but it's in the Atlantic Ocean, and it's very well documented.
But, you know, that brings us back to, again, if you're diving a military ship, like a U.S. ship, then there's a provenance for that, right? I mean, you can't put a claim on a government ship, can you?
Sort of the quick answer is no, but it's more complicated than that. And so technically, yes, you can.
Let me go to east of the Rockies, Brian. It says noon in Georgia. I know it well. Brian, you're talking with Dr. Lee Spence.
Hey, Ian. Hey, Dr. Spence. I had one quick comment and two quick questions. My comment was I hadn't heard Sailing by Christopher Cross yet, and I was kind of sad about that.
Yeah. I'm not much for yacht rock, but it did cross my mind to add it on there. I did have other ones of that era. Fair enough. I'm glad you noticed it. It would have been a good one. Go ahead.
Two questions. The first one is, what does he do to protect his findings from, like, poachers? And if he leaves a site and comes back, how does he know if anybody's been there? My second question would be, has he ever done any advising for video games or movies or anything?
Yeah. Good questions. Excellent questions.
I would love to do a video game. I think that'd be great to do one. Treasure and the hunt for it, the research, the problems, the government officials, the dangers involved, all of that would make a great video game.
Yeah,
Brian, what was your other part of your question?
What do you do to protect your findings from poachers? And, like, if you leave the site and come back, how do you know if somebody's been there while you were gone?
Well, I have had trouble on one wreck recently where somebody pulled some stuff off. He actually pulled the safe off of one of my wrecks. And so we're in court over that right now.
Yeah, I
bet. I have no doubt he will regret that he did it.
Good. West of the Rockies, Joseph is in San Diego on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Dr. Spence, I'd like to know what your thoughts are on what the biggest wreck that hasn't been found that you are currently
the name of a ship that makes his heart quicken. That's a great question. Go ahead, Dr. Spence.
A name jumps in immediately to me, but I'm not going to tell you the name because I want to go after it.
Yeah.
In today's dollars, if you melted the gold down, and that would be a stupid thing to do, but if you melted all the coins down, it would be $2 billion.
Wow.
There's that much. And it's gold. It's not silver.
Mm. So there is one out there. There's a great white whale for you out there.
Yes, there is.
Okay, interesting. You're gonna have to come back, you know. I hope this hasn't disrupted your sleeping pattern enough that you won't come back again, because this has been fun. First time caller line, Don is in Wichita on Coast to Coast AM. Don?
Hi, how you doing?
Good. You're talking with Dr. Spence.
Yeah, I have got the fever. I'm a flatlander, but I've got the gold fever bad. And I've studied all of these various things I can find, and the thing that just really floors me is this whole thing about the Spanish and the conquest and the conquistadors, and they probed clear into Kansas, and you're talking about things found in off the coast of Texas. The state of Texas won't let you metal detect the coastline. In Florida, it's finders keepers on the Gold Coast or the Treasure Coast. The thing that gets me is how the Spanish went about doing all of this. I mean, they had the Philippines. They were bringing stuff from the Philippines to Acapulco, putting it on a mule train to Mexico City, going all the way down to Veracruz, loading it on ships, taking it to Havana. Then they were coming out of Colombia, I believe, and they were bringing the Inca gold and the Colombian emeralds and taking those to Havana. Now, the whole point.
But wait, wait, let's get Dr. Spence in here, because you've got a lot there to work with, but I'd like to hear what he has to say about that. Go ahead.
What I'm describing is the manifest.
Well, what was his question?
His question's about the manifests.
Yeah, the manifest is how have you
Well, there are manifests. Whenever you're shipping that much money and all, there's often governments involved. It certainly was with the Spanish stuff. And so you had to satisfy that government. So you had a list of everything that was on that ship, what was legally on the ship. There was also a great deal of smuggling. There might be twice as much smuggled as there was on the manifest. But, yeah, those manifests exist on the Spanish galleons.
That's great.
Yeah, well, some of them exist in Spain, but a lot have just been recovered in Havana.
That'd be very interesting. Let me get to, I'm going to try to get Norman in here before the bottom of the hour because there's so many people who want to talk with Dr. Spence. Norman's in Toronto. So I guess I should be saying go Raptors. But
You should. You should. I'm disappointed in you.
Well, let me say something. I was curious. Do you think if Durant comes back, they're still going to take game five?
I think the Raptors got it. I think they're just too far ahead.
They are playing beautifully. It's a super solid team. I'm very impressed.
You can congratulate me next week or something like that.
I'll do that. Hold me to that.
I want to ask your guest about a situation like the Franklin expedition that we have in Canada. It held special significance to us as a country. And I'm just wondering if there would have been any role for the private sector in something like that. And does your guest have any red lines against what he will do and what he won't do? In situations that hold special significance and
cultural significance
over a certain part of the country.
Go ahead.
Big in that.
Let's get that answer in before the bottom of the hour. Lee, what are your curbs?
There are plenty of lines that I won't cross. And if I'm doing something that would destroy history, destroy an archaeological site, I'm not going to do it. If I'm saving it, yes, I will do it. As far as the Franklin goes, the Franklin expedition vessels go. At one point, I actually considered doing an expedition to find them. I was down in Bolivia. I was a guest of the president down there. And one of the other guests was a person that was doing a lot of Arctic and Antarctic explorations. And so he had, he and I had talked about going after that. We did not get around to it. And of course, it's now both those vessels have been found.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I may poke at that again, a little coming up as we get into the last half hour with Dr. Lee Spence. We'll give you the numbers coming up in just a moment. And then you can go online, you can take a look at some of his photos, too, which I mentioned earlier. But if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll find he posted a couple of different photos. You get a better idea of who he is and what he does. And, boy, I've enjoyed this so much. I have a feeling any day now we might hear his name again in the headlines in the news, and we'll have to have him back coming up on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Coming up, we're going to wrap up this hour with another bunch of great calls, people hanging on to talk with Dr. Lee Spence, treasure hunter, marine archaeologist, and somebody who helped us answer some questions, some preliminary questions anyway, regarding this really cool mystery off the coast of Florida, a shipwreck that has been found that only has a number on it, but not much more else to work with, at least for the time being. We'll get you that answer when it becomes available. In the meantime, we'll get him to you on a call coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, Dr. Spence, we were talking about your curbs, and you said that there are lines you won't cross. I do think one question that comes up a lot now with modern archaeology that was not being asked 20 years ago, maybe not even 10 years ago, but I think it legitimately should be asked, which is, at what point are we digging into somebody else's culture? We're sort of fetishizing their life. We aren't doing anything that's necessarily informative of history or particularly scientific. We're just doing something to kind of scratch an itch or to make some money. And going into areas, and this may be less to do with marine archaeology, with the archaeology in general, you know, where cultures would have, they would prefer not to have those sites, you know, disrupted. They would prefer to have those sites just left the way they are, but they don't get a vote. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think you're talking really about land, land sites.
Yep.
And although I've done that in the past, I no longer do that. It's just, it's too hard work. It's too hot and tiring and so on. And a lot of my feelings have changed. When I was younger, I didn't know as much as I do now, and I respect more now of past cultures and realize that these are people that died, and we should not be robbing their graves.
And but there really isn't a parallel for that in the open water archaeology that you do.
There's a parallel where?
And so there really isn't a parallel for that in the type of underwater archaeology that you do?
No, it is so totally different. And that's one of the problems we have, is getting people to understand how different it is. We're talking about ships that carried tons of stuff. Even the real early ones carried tons of cargo. And on the land sites, you're finding handfuls of stuff, not tons of stuff. And
right.
So it's different that way. The stuff on land, what you find may represent 100 years of history. It may represent 1,000 years of history. On the shipwreck, it's one day of history.
Oh, that's very interesting. Very well put. Thank you. Enjoyed that. First time caller line, John is in Powell, Ohio, on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So my question is for the doctor, if he had ever heard of the wreck of the Marquette and Bessemer number 2. I'm kind of a Lake Erie history buff.
Yeah.
My grandfather was first mate on the C&B steamer up on the lakes. And my understanding is that the Marquette and Bessemer is like the holy grail of Lake Erie shipwrecks that has never been found. And my grandfather, I can remember him telling me that it was rumored that the strong box on the I guess it was the Marquette and Bessemer was a rail ferry, and the strong box on the ship was rumored to have about $40,000 worth of gold coin for the payroll of the company when it went down. And I didn't know if you might have heard anything about that.
Dr. Spence?
No, I'm not familiar with it, but $40,000 in gold would be about 150 pounds of gold. And that would be an amazing find when you think of each of the coins, assuming it was in coins. That'd just be a spectacular find.
Yeah. Interesting about that idea of Lake Erie, too. And I grew up on the shores of Lake Michigan. And I might as well have been growing up on an ocean, right? You can't see the other side. And it's easy to forget about the number of ships that get lost in the Great Lakes, but it's turbulent as hell half the year.
Oh, it's very dangerous there. See, part of what it is, in the ocean, the waves from a storm will go hundreds of miles. In the Great Lakes, the waves go to one side of the lake. They hit that shore, they bounce and start coming back, and they're going against the other waves. So it makes the waves much steeper and higher for the same storm than there would be out in the ocean. So the Great Lakes are far more dangerous.
Tom is in Southern California on a wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM. Tom?
Hello, Ian. Thanks for taking my call. And Dr. Spence, I just wanted to let you guys know that I had a friend of mine that I just buried in May that was actually on the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, really?
Yes. We,
so sorry.
We served in the Navy, and I didn't know that until his funeral that he was on there.
But he had served on it on another on a previous voyage, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And but I mean, yeah, he was not on it when it went down.
Right, because they lost all hands. But that's very interesting.
Exactly.
Did he have insight as to why it went down?
No, I never heard that from him. And, you know, I think it was just in a storm because Superior, I think Lake Superior is probably the worst of the Great Lakes for ships going down. That's just my own thought.
I don't think. Go ahead, Dr. Spence.
I'm not sure what the question was, but
well,
the danger, what's that?
Yeah, it was actually, we were talking about Lake Superior and the Edmund Fitzgerald in particular. But
absolutely. It's a very dangerous lake. As far as the cause, I haven't really followed that, but I've been in storms where we were taking on water through our hatches, even when we had them battened down and all. We were taking on so much water that the refrigerator had broken loose and was floating around in the galley acting like a battering ram.
Ugh.
And the ocean can be real rough. The Great Lakes even rougher.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you, Tom. I kind of go with the I've studied it a little bit, and the hatches theory, that it just didn't take much to send her down once the hatches were breached and the water came in because of all the iron ore that was in it, and it just started. It was just a quick failure that just happened so fast, and there was nothing. But that was based on previous voyages where they had a problem with the hatches. Houston has Scott on a wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Lee Spence. Go ahead, Scott.
Good morning, guys. I've got two questions, and the second one is a two-part. The first question is, have you ever done any work with Clive Cussler? And the second question, the History Channel's doing such a great job with The Curse of Oak Island and The Curse of Civil War Gold. Have you done any research on either of those and have any theories?
Well, I was actually on a documentary on the Civil War Gold, and I do have a lot of theories. I think I know where some of the gold was hidden at one point. I think that particular batch of gold was recovered, but I had located some documents that supported it. And there's a lot more gold out there than what most of the historians say was the amount of gold that was missing at the end of the war. But we'll do that on another show.
Yeah, really.
As far as the other part of your question, have I worked for Clive Cussler? No, we fought a lawsuit in court for years, but I have not worked with it.
What was that about?
People that say that that Dirk Pitt was based on me. And I think there's actually some truth to that. He'll say the opposite. In fact, he has said the opposite. But I think that it was probably based on partly on me and partly on a friend of mine, Bob Marks. Just the different things we've done. And Clive has claimed a number of discoveries that I previously had been credited with.
And that's what was that the basis of the lawsuit?
Well, that lawsuit involved on the Hunley. We were suing each other for false advertising.
Did you win?
Neither of us won. Mine against him was thrown out on the basis, basically what the judge said is that he had been claiming for over 2 years that he was the discoverer of it, and I knew I had discovered it prior to that, so I should have brought my lawsuit earlier.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know you could bring a lawsuit over something like that initially. Otherwise, I would have done it. He sued me because I was giving talks, and I was saying I had discovered it, and I was saying I had said in one of them that he had used my information and all. And so he was suing me for slander and for false advertising. The judge threw my case out, but the judge agreed that I could use my discovery of the Hunley, that I could use that to defend myself in
the suit that he brought against me. And after the judge said that, they dropped their suit.
Yeah.
And so yeah. They just dropped theirs.
Interesting. Very interesting. Thank you. Let me go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lee Spence. Wayne?
Good evening, gentlemen, Sir Eon and Dr. Spence. The gentleman brought up submarines earlier, and I'm wondering if you've ever heard any stories about submarines themselves actually doing exploring, looking for things in the ocean, such as other, you know, sunken submarines, particularly the Nazi submarines that are unaccounted for, the ones towards the end of the war that possibly Hitler escaped on. That would be a good archaeological find. And I was also wondering if it's feasible to use a ship such as the Glomar Explorer to do these searches with, or is that just too financially out of the question?
Let's focus on that last one, on that the Glomar Explorer, you're saying?
Right.
Yeah, Dr. Spence, do you know about that?
Well, the Glomar Explorer, of course, was used to go after that Rush, I believe it was a Russian sub in the Pacific. And it, Willard Bascom was the designer of that. And I knew Willard. He was a really nice person. And when at one point I was helping someone who had been researching, I guess it was the Monitor, and thought that he knew where it was, thought a particular wreck was it, and it did prove to be it. But what I had suggested was that they use the Glomar Explorer for that project. I don't know if they ended up using it or not. I don't remember.
But it would be very expensive to employ that for just anything.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
But there are wrecks that it would be worth using something like that on. The one I mentioned earlier is that with all the gold on it, if you melted it down, it'd be worth a couple billion dollars. It would certainly be worth it on a job like that.
First time caller line, Ann is in Elkhorn, Nebraska on Coast to Coast AM. Ann?
Hi, my question is for Dr. Spence tonight. My ancient family estate is off the coast of England in Devon, and the Spanish Armada sank in that area. A lot of the wood from the ships came up on the shore, and they built part of the estate from that. Do you know what was salvaged from all of those ships that sank?
That's very cool.
Well, I know the treasure was found, and people find it odd that there was a treasure aboard the Spanish Armada because that they were going to invade England, and why have treasure bringing it to battle? But Spain was convinced that they were going to do this invasion. They were going to become the new rulers of England, and some of the people that were aboard these ships, they were going to be the new rulers of it. And so they were bringing all their wealth because they were going to live there basically for the rest of their lives. And it just didn't work out that way.
That's very interesting. That explains that.
A friend of mine, Sidney Wignall, had found one of those Spanish wrecks and pulled treasure off of it. And he was actually knighted by the Queen of England over it.
Very cool. Alan's east of the Rockies in Atlanta, Georgia, may be our second to last caller. We'll get on Steve in New Hampshire if you can hang on. Alan?
Good morning, Ian and Dr. Spence. How you doing?
Good morning.
Ian, you made my night with Harry Chapin. That was just wonderful.
Oh, good.
Favorite performers. And yes, it was a double album.
It was a cool.
That was the name of the album also.
Yeah, it's a cool album. It was a beautiful cover. I remember the cover, the artwork was amazing.
But he was one of my all-time favorite performers. I got to shoot one of his shows, which was also.
Neat.
I was taking a new cruise ship from Helsinki to New York, and we were going past the site where the Titanic went down. So we decided to bring every, like your bunker music tonight, every imaginable undersea disaster. So we had A Night to Remember, Raise the Titanic, Grey Lady Down, and all those.
Right.
One of the movies was The Deep that Dr. Spence alluded to. which was based on a true story in Bermuda about a wreck that had all these bottles of morphine. So of later years in my career, I spent 3 weeks working on a convention in Bermuda, and one of our guest speakers and somebody that chose to hang out with us was a man named Teddy Tucker, who spent 60 years mapping all the wrecks around Bermuda. And Dr. Spence, I was wondering if you ever met him or got to work with him at all.
Yes, I knew Teddy. Of course, he's passed away. But he actually, he wasn't supposed to, but he was on the Academy of Underwater Arts and Sciences and voted for my Nogi Award. And when I said he wasn't supposed to tell that he voted for me. That's a secret. But he contacted me and let me know he had voted for it.
That's great.
I received the Nogi back in 2012. That's considered the most distinguished award in the diving industry. It's technically, statistically harder to get than a Nobel Prize or a Pulitzer Prize or whatever. Well, not well, than a Nobel, but a Pulitzer Prize, right, or an Oscar. Nobel is much higher.
I'd give it to you. Steve is on a wild card line in New Hampshire on Coast to Coast AM. Steve?
Doctor, you answered my question on the Hanley. Do you believe the rest of the USS Monitor should be raised by NOAA and put on display, or should it be left to fade into the elements?
That's a great question.
Well, I think it's more of a question of, can we afford to raise something like that and preserve it? And if we can afford to raise it and preserve it, I think we should, because it will be destroyed on the bottom. But you have to make a judgment call there. Is it worth it for the, are we going to have to use tax dollars to pay for something that some people may not be interested in? Or will it support itself as a museum? And as I say, it's a judgment call. I'd love to see it raised.
I think it'd be very cool. And I think we would still learn a lot from it too. Well, we learned a lot from you, Dr. Spence. Thank you so much for all your time. I think you'll hear from us when we hear from you, right? When you make headlines, don't be surprised if we're the first call on your cell phone to get you back on the air on Coast to Coast. Would you come back on?
Well, Ian, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this.
Well, it was a hoot. It really did. And you know, it's funny because I think about all of the careers that I've had a chance to do. You know, I love being a talk show host on Coast to Coast. I loved being a radio host with my wife in the morning. I love being a professor. I've loved working with television. I like publishing books. But there's still a part of me that's still drawn to the idea of, is it too late for me to grab a snorkel, start practicing diving, and find some wreck somewhere? Still the coolest. So thanks for making it seem a little bit more real tonight. And everybody else will be back on in a couple of weeks on a Friday and a Saturday night. Coming up, we're already lining up the guests for that. Should be a lot of fun. Be safe out there with these storms and the bad weather on the way. In the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.